This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwize.com. Enjoy the talk. One of the things that's different about this particular talk from the other talks is this information overlaps from animal to animal, species to species, household to household. So the information that the animals ask for in order to make them happier, it doesn't matter if it's a rabbit asking for it. A lot of the time, that's totally applicable to a horse. So the good news is you get to take the information and apply it to anybody that's at home. And then the other thought that I had regarding today's talk is that you may not have specific questions because this is more informing you directly from the animal, so it may not trigger a question per se. One of the things I'm going to ask you to do is, as you're listening to the top 10, as I'm going to call them, the top 10 most commonly requested happiness requests from the animals, is perhaps if it triggers anything in you about whether or not you're wondering, well, one thing I tried was, and I wonder if that's applicable, if Terry would feel that that might meet that kind of need, feel free to jot it down and we'll ask about it, because I think we may have more question time than usual at the end of this call, simply because of the fact that it's not specific to a species or whatever. Okay, so have pen and paper nearby if you want to think of something that you're doing, and you'll catch on a little bit more when you hear some of the content as to why I'm asking you to ponder. Okay, so I like to start briefly, and those that have been on the call, this is a little duplicative, but I just like to always mention why I'm doing the teletalks, and the main reason is because they're convenient, easy, fun, great way for you guys to learn a little something new. I love it that you're attending live. Thank you for making the time to attend live. You do get the benefit of being able to ask questions when you're on the call live. But as you do know by now, the calls are recorded, and they are available up to 30 days after the talk. So if you mention it to somebody and they say, oh, I would have loved to have heard that, they can still contact me and purchase it, same cost, just $15, and purchase it to listen to. Or in the future, if you cannot attend live, you can register still, and I send it out to you, the instructions, after the call is complete, and you can listen by telephone or by your computer. It's also a wonderful time to continue to learn from those that we love. As we know, animals are wonderful teachers in our lives, and without them, I think, I know I wouldn't be the person I am without animals. They continue to help me strive to be a better person, to learn, to grow, to love, to keep my heart open in the world, and fortunately for me professionally, to help me help others do all of that. And it's also a wonderful opportunity to continue to connect into the world of people such as yourselves who do love our animals very much. And whether we're having tough times or whether we're having joyful times with our animals, it's a nice way, or even in life in general, it's a nice way to connect with other loving human beings. So that's why I'm doing these teletalks, and I am loving them. And several of you have asked about the cat talk and the dog talk, because those were the first two, and many people missed them. I am going to repeat those in the fall. I just haven't picked dates yet. So I will be announcing those. Those will be available again. Okay. So one of my favorite things about helping people help their animals is I have the luxury and the joy of working with people who are extremely loving, extremely kind, extremely genuine, would do anything, as we were just saying a little bit briefly. I know that all of you listening would do anything for your animals because you love them so much. And so one of the things I wanted to share, which I still find amazing, and I'm still asked, every so often I'll have a friend or a family member say, wow, when you're doing a consultation, do you ever have an animal say, I'm unhappy, get me out of this house, or don't make me live here, or I'm so glad you're checking with me, I can't stay, I don't like them, they're mean to me. And so for whatever reason, people who don't quite understand animals or animal communication, they go to this fear factor of, could that be something that is a possibility that would come up? And my answer, of course, is absolutely not, because with that going on, those people would not be paying me, probably, to talk to their animals. And only twice in all the years that I've done this Have I had a situation where I'm starting to notice an echo and it's distracting me, guys? Hang on one second. I'm going to do a overall mute. I don't know if you're hearing that, but it just came on. Hang on one sec. Okay, let me see if that takes that echo away. Okay, so now I have you all on mute, and I will remember to unmute you, so none of you can unmute right now. That does something to help with the echo, I've been told. So that sounds better. Sorry for the interruption. Okay, so we will go back to when my friends and family ask me that kind of question, of course the answer is no. What I have are wonderful people who are asking not only specific questions about how somebody is feeling, or if a vet hasn't been able to figure something out just quite yet, or they just want to know, are their animals happy and joyful, or behavior issues, etc. But the bottom line is, almost always on calls, I will have people ask me, first-time clients especially, because the repeat clients are kind of asking this throughout all of their calls in some way, shape, or form. But on a first-time call, people will almost always ask, is there anything else my animal needs to be happy? Anything else I can do for them? Anything at all, which is such a genuine, loving question to begin with. And the animals often have answers. And I find it very interesting to find out the responses of the people. And the reason is because most of the time it's little brief stuff that perhaps already came up about, and you'll hear them. I've got my top 10 here, but it may have come up about food or exercise or whatever. But a lot of times, believe it or not, you are going to learn today that what they want is us to do more things for us, because otherwise they're taking care of us. So as you listen to these top 10s, you're going to realize it's not all about what do we do for them, but what can we do for ourselves that can help them and benefit them? So just this week, I was pondering when I was writing my notes for this, because I can always come up with tons of examples, but I thought, well, let's just see in the course of a week what comes up when I think of the common question of, is there anything else my animal needs? So I'm going to give you a few fun examples. One was, this woman was wanting to help her dog, a dachshund, learn to use the stairs next to the bed, the doggy steps that she got, because she's heard that dachshunds can often hurt their backs, especially leaping off of a high bed. So when part of the consult was going on, she was talking about the stairs and all of that, and, you know, could you show them to them and let them know that's what it's for? And so we did all that. But towards the end, when she said, is there anything else he needs to be happy? He said, treats on the steps next to the bed. And the reason he wanted treats on the steps next to the bed wasn't just because he loves treats, because that's fine and pretty much a given for most of us beings on the planet. We often love treats. But because he just wasn't able to comprehend how to remember to go use those steps, because he was just a young guy, happy guy, and his mom would walk out of the room and he'd leap off the bed behind her. It just was normal. So just because us humans have in our head, oh, but that could hurt your back eventually, so I got you these steps, and these steps would be really good to use, and see, they're right over here, doesn't mean a dog who's happy and joyful and leaping off a bed is going to stop and go, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to use that in case I ever hurt my back someday. So he came up with a really good request, and that was, could you put treats on the steps? Of course, she laughed hysterically and said, he'll do anything to get treats. And I said, yes, but you did ask him, what else does he need to be happy, and he wants to please you by using those steps, but he's being honest in saying he just doesn't think to use those steps. It's a new behavior he's going to have to learn. So he came up with a great idea, and I wanted to share that one because that's a good way in which he's saying, okay, if you want me happier, help me learn this thing over here known as these steps that you're really wanting me to do, because otherwise I realize I'm forgetting to do what you want, and I don't like it when I don't do what you want. Another example of this week was when a woman asked me, a different woman, another client, asked about her horse, and she said, and her horse has been dealing with some health issues, and we had some very specific content that we were covering, and she said, and I know what she meant towards the end, she didn't specifically say, what else does he need to be happy, but she said, what else can I do for him, and I know she was meaning in particular about the health situations that she's so concerned about, and the horse showed me romping and playing. And And the horse is not able to romp and play just yet, but because of the health issues. But I said, well, he wants to romp and play. And she said, but that'll hurt his leg. And I said, I understand. But remember, when you ask him what else does he need, his being needs more playfulness. He's saying, not right now because I'm injured, but I do need more playfulness in my life. And he wondered when he was going to get to go on more rides with his person. And she said, but he's been injured for a while. And so basically we had to explain to him why he wasn't frolicking and having fun, and that could come soon. But also what it brought up was she was overprotecting him because of the injury. And she said, well, it's not that severe of an injury that I can't be walking him. I can't be going out and just goofing around and playing with him with a ball or something. And she started naming ways in which she could offer more playfulness to him without getting so serious about getting the saddle on him, riding him, putting him on a trail where maybe he's going to slip on a rock, and all those serious thoughts she had about it was more black and white before. Well, he's injured. I can't take him out. And when he asked for playfulness, once she got through her concern about the injury, she was able to understand, oh, well, there's a little of this I could do or a little of that. And she started naming ways in which she could offer more playfulness to him, which, in my opinion, will help him heal. Because he'll be happier, he'll probably exercise a little bit more, he'll move his joints and other things around a little bit more, so he's not constantly moving with just using the other three legs predominantly and favoring the injured leg. So that was fun to see how the animal was asking for more playfulness and how the woman went from, you know, the serious space of injury and trauma and all this stuff to, oh, I could offer a little more playfulness for sure. And I can only hope and think that next time I talk to her, she's probably going to say, he healed really fast after that, or it went really well, or we had so much fun. And that also makes my job wonderful to be able to hear the feedback afterwards. And then a third example of just this week. When a woman was checking in with her cats, she has three, and she asked at the end, is there anything else they need? You know, I'll get them anything. They're indoor-only cats. And one kitty said, I need to touch the earth. And she said, oh, he can't go outside. There's roads. It's too dangerous. We have coyotes in the area. We have fox. And he said, I need to touch the earth. And so I said it to her again, just like that. And we had to work, we, the cat and I, had to work on the woman to help her understand maybe there would be a way for him to touch the earth just briefly, you know, just to go out and stand on the earth and smell the soil and smell the grasses. He wasn't wanting to wander. He wasn't wanting to be an outdoor cat. He wasn't wanting to take off on her. He wasn't planning on being mischievous, though I understood her fears and concerns around it. But again, as humans, we tend to be extreme in our thought process, so she went right from touching the earth request to imagining in her mind him needing to be an outdoor cat with all the dangers out there, and it was absolutely not an option, which I completely understand. However, we were able to help her realize, she said, well, I go out and water the plants every morning. Would he be happy to just stand on my patio with me? And, you know, there is some soil around where the flowers are and stuff, and I could let him hang out a bit before I water. And he said, absolutely, that would make all the difference. That's what he needs. He just needs to connect with the earth. He loves his life. He's happy being indoors. He loves feeling safe. But if he could just touch the earth. So, again, another example of when we ask that question, what else does he need to be happy? It's interesting to look at where do we go with the answers. And today I'm going to teach you where do the animals go with the answers. It's very fun to see. First, before I talk about the top 10, though, I am going to talk to you a little bit about what is a caregiver. Because all of you love your animals so much, and I was realizing this expression that I've used over the years, I just love my animal to death. I don't know where I learned that expression, but I've used it for years as a term of endearment. I love my animal to death. I just love them to death. And I realized, you know, it's true. We all love them till the moment they die, and then we still love them, of course. But that expression really says it all. We want to love every minute we have with them. We want to love them and take care of them utterly, thoroughly, meticulously, because we love them so. And we do intend to do this until they can no longer be with us. So there's no question in my mind that as caregivers, as human companions of wonderful, loving animals, we have complete intention of doing nothing but the best for them. And I want you all to know that they know that, and they feel that, and they understand that. So they're already showing you ways in which you can help them improve just daily, because they feel your intention. You wake up in the morning and you think, oh, I love you so much. Thank you for those cuddles. Let's go feed you breakfast. They already feel you wanting to reciprocate the love and through giving and caring and taking care of them. So never, ever doubt whether or not your animals know your strong intentions to offer them the best possible life, okay? And then, as anything in life, we do know that there is room for improvement. So what you need to start doing, one of the things I suggest as a caregiver, is express your gratitude for their love and let them know you will do anything for them, and let them know you're listening on your own. Whether you feel telepathically you can hear them or not does not matter, but let them know you're listening and trust that they can be your teachers and show you. Because there are a lot of times when people will say, oh, I didn't even notice my horse was injured, and I was, you know, playing with him or feeding him or walking, and he kept nudging me a certain way, and then one day I realized he was chewing funny, and he was trying to show me he was chewing funny, and he was drooling a little bit, and turns out he had a bad tooth. And so what happens, I mean, I love offering my services, and I love that people need my services, but I want to realize that you're so empowered with so much more than you may realize in listening to the animals. Especially if you let them know, I love you, I want to care for you, and I'm listening. And then let them take it from there, because a lot of wisdom will continue to come through. And as you are caregivers, I want you to also start to begin to think about the balance of life. Because one of the most common things I see that happens is we over-caregive and we under-receive. And I'm going to say that again. We over-caregive and we under-receive. I can't tell you how many times I have said to humans, your animal wants you to just sit still for a few minutes and be present, or just be in the moment, or just receive some love, especially when they say, how come he just stares at me when I'm sitting on the couch? He just stares at me. It's like, oh, he's loving you. Are you stopping and receiving the love, or are you busy trying to figure out what he needs? Because if you're busy trying to figure out what he needs, you just missed the boat. You missed the moment, and you missed what he's offering for you. So as caregivers, I find we are out of balance. And I find my clients in particular love their animals so much, and they're so busy taking care of the animals, and especially if there's a health condition or a serious situation, or you've merged another family member and they're not getting along, or, you know, any kind of change is going on, we're busy trying to make it better, make it good, make it happen. And the animals are busy trying to help us make it better, make it good, and make it happen. And sometimes, literally, the two are not meeting. So it's time for you to start thinking of yourself as a caregiver and a receiver. Because anything can get out of control if we are not in balance. And one example I want to give is, I'll always remember this because it was sad for me to see this happen. There was a woman that called me, this was many years ago, and her cat had cancer. And she called the first time to say, what does he want me to do? And he said, I'm really okay with this. And she said, but I need to know, does he want chemo? Does he want radiation? Does he want it cut out? We think we can cut most of it out. She was so, understandably so, caught up in what she had been told by the vet about the options. She was asking the question, what does he want, but she wasn't listening to his answer. His answer was, I'm okay with this. I don't need you to go to all kinds of extremes. We've had a really good life together. And she said, but he's only 7. It's not fair. And I said, I understand, but here's his answer. He really is okay with the fact that he has cancer. He's very present. He's very in the moment. And yet she felt, understandably so again, that she needed to do something for him, anything for him. And she proceeded to take him to an oncologist and get him going on chemo and radiation. And then she would call every couple of weeks, and we'd do consults and check in with him. And he was saying, I'll do this. At one point he said, I'll do 7 chemotherapy treatments. And she said, but the vet says it's a minimum of 10. And I said, okay, well, I'm just telling you what he said. And, of course, I can always be wrong, but I will always say what I get, even if it's not accurate. The human needs to do with that information whatever they're going to do. He said at the next call, too, I only want to do about 7. And my concern in hearing that and knowing she wasn't listening is maybe he was warning her, after 7, it might do me in. I was concerned about that. but and I did express to her, you know, I don't know if there's something going on around the 7 mark, but he has said 7 again. And at this point, she was so lost in the fear of losing her animal that she was completely out of control with the caregiving, not in a bad way by any means. She was doing the best she could, she knew to do, she could the best she could find. At one point, she started crying on the phone and said that she had to take a second mortgage out on her house for the cancer treatment because it was costing her so much money. And in my head, I thought, that really makes me sad that this cat told her he's at peace about all this, and she so desperately wants him to stick around and wants to help him, more than anything, wants to help him, that I felt like she was flailing. She was out of control with, what do I do? How can I do it? Let me give as much as I can. I don't care how much it costs me. I'll do a second mortgage on my home, you know, whatever it takes. And she was in debt, and she was doing all this stuff. And so he made it through the 10 treatments. He did not have anything significant on the 7th, and I think he did that for her. And they said that the cancer was gone in a month after the cancer treatments were done. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars later, his cancer returned. Now, this isn't to say don't help an animal with cancer by any means, but definitely check in on the balance. And how much are we panicking? I used to work in the human world as a health educator, and before that as a medical assistant, so I have a medical background. And I also worked as in cancer, the area of cancer education. So I've watched in the people world, of course, how people panic about cancer and how they panic about losing their lives and how they surrender. And I'm not saying cancer treatment isn't a good thing, but if you completely surrender your power and you lose your balance, it's not healthy for anyone or anything, or it's not beneficial to a situation or a healing. So it's all about keeping things in balance when we're a caregiver. Perhaps that cancer treatment could have worked great, and that would be great, but my sense is that it was too out of balance of how badly she wanted to help this cat and how much the cat was saying, I'm really okay with this. And so the second time the cancer came, she told the kitty, I get it now, and I will just love you. And the vet said that he had no more than a month, and he lasted 8 months, and he had a great life, and she had a wonderful, healing, loving time with him, and he taught her tremendous things in those 8 months, and she says she would have never traded it for the world. From my perspective, I would have loved that she didn't have to spend those thousands and thousands of dollars and risk possibly losing her house. But that's because she was an ultimate caregiver and coming from a place of true love, which I understand. So my goal with you guys today is to remind you all, ask yourself if you're in a place of balance when you are giving. Have you slowed down? Have you taken a deep breath? Have you looked at all options? Have you stopped and allowed the animal to love you? So it's about balance. It's not about rights and wrongs, but it's about balance. And another example I want to give, and my friends, these are personal friends of mine, and they've asked me to share this story because it was one of those we wished we had done otherwise. And they had, excuse me, they had a dog who was a 6-year-old Rottweiler mix, and she was diagnosed with bone cancer. And she had come from a very, very, very abusive situation when they found her at about one and a half years old. And this doggie had a complete transformation in her lifetime with them, complete. She went from barely being on the planet to the most happy, joyful, loving, trusting dog you could ever meet. And people that met her when she was 4 or 5 or 6 would have never known she was the dog that those of us knew when they first found her, almost dead and emaciated and abused. And so she felt, when she was diagnosed with her bone cancer, no big deal, she said, because I've come into this lifetime for a healing, and I had my healing. I had my emotional healing, and I've had a great life. And they said to her, well, there is this option of amputating your leg. And she was a big girl, and amputated legs for big dogs is not an easy thing. And she said, I really don't need that. I'm really okay with this. I'm probably going to die of the cancer anyhow. And she kept saying it so upbeat that it was even hard for me to represent that to her because they're crying on the phone. And I'm saying, but she really wants you to know that she's a happy girl, and nothing is going to take away the wonderful accomplishment she's had in this lifetime, how much she's come into her full being, how she has found love. She is rejoicing and celebrating this lifetime. She doesn't give a flip about cancer. Well, understandably, they found it very difficult to know what to do because the vet said, you know, if you amputate the leg, we cut the cancer away, and the likelihood of it not coming back is high, and you can have this opportunity for her to have more years, and she was young. And so they really fretted. They very much so fretted over this option. And she, and of course, I was a personal friend, so I said, I can't, you know, I can't be a friend that gives you advice. I either represent her or not, but maybe you need to go to a different animal communicator. And they said, no, we hear her version. Would she be upset with us if we did have the leg amputated with hopes that we could let her have this wonderful life even longer? And she said, no, I won't be upset with you. I don't need it for me, but if you want to do it, that's okay. And so they did. They had her leg amputated, and she died a month later. And she had a long, drawn-out month of pain and agony and suffering, and she died of cancer. Anyhow, cancer was throughout her body, and how they missed it, I don't know. But she died a month later, and they so regretted that last month that they felt they caused her that pain. That if they had joined her in rejoicing about how happy her life was, and even if they hadn't known me, or even if they didn't work with an animal communicator, if they looked at that dog and thought, what a great life, look what we've offered you, if they stayed in the present moment, like animals teach us to do, they could have said, you know, you got cancer, and it's going to take you younger than we would have liked, but you're such a happy girl. We don't think we want to put you through pain. We don't want to put you through any of that. Let's keep celebrating the life you have until we can't have it together anymore, and then we'll gently help you go. So they've really had to work on feeling guilty, feeling bad. Of course, we've talked with her in the spirit world, and she wants them to stop that, because the more they feel guilty and bad, then she's up there trying to take care of their broken hearts. And so they've really had to work on healing around all of this. Now, there are some dogs that you amputate a leg, and they do happily ever after for 3 years, 5 years, and the people are really glad. So I'm not saying, again, the cancer treatment is not a bad thing. Amputations are not specifically a bad thing. But each situation is important to embrace as an individual situation. So I'm emphasizing these couple of stories because I know how hard it is when we are faced with a serious diagnosis. And I know how hard it is when we have animals that are ill or sick, or we have elder animals. That's going to be another talk specific to elders. But even just helping an elder animal get around, and how long do we help them get around, and what's right, what's wrong, what's too much pain, what's not, you know, enough movement. And it can get real crazy-making for us as caregivers. So the bottom line is stay in your hearts and stay in the present moment. More answers will come to you if you do that than if you get out of balance and lost in the fear of losing them or the fear of not giving them absolutely everything they deserve. Stay present. So with that said, I have seen wonderful love, excellent care, some imbalances, but for the most part, absolutely, I'm inspired to share the top 10 common requests because these repeat themselves from animal to animal. And no matter what species they are, no matter what type of household, whether it's many animals in the household or one animal, because each being is individual and each being answers their questions for themselves. So, again, I'm going to remind you as I start these top 10 that I encourage you to think about what you might be currently doing that could be enhanced. And I also encourage you to take this information to heart and reevaluate the balance of the giving and receiving in your home. And I'm going to say that sentence again. I want you to reevaluate the balance of giving and receiving in your home. Okay? And so, and remember, we'll have a chance for questions at the end. Sorry, just need a sip of water. Okay, top 10 answers. When I've asked animals, what else would make you happy? These are not in order of importance or commonness. These are just top tens. So the first one is, and some of you have heard me say this as students, some of you have heard me say this in some of the other talks, and this is, if nothing else, this is so essential to do for our animals. They want you to learn them as the individual that they are. They say, learn my perspective, learn my personality, not my background, not my breed, and definitely not my history, if it's been a bad one or a sad one. So learn me is the request number one. So, for example, that dachshund that I mentioned, if she's working on learning his perspective, she would understand he's not being obstinate by not using the steps. He just doesn't get it yet, and he doesn't stop to think about it because he's busy being a happy guy, leaping off the bed, running after his mom. It's just not in his brain yet. That's all. So if you're wondering about something with your animal, stop and imagine that you're them, and what might their perspective be on that? So I did a consultation yesterday. And this woman kept saying, well, can you tell him to stop doing that? And can you tell him this is danger and he can't do that? And he must not do this. And I had already told her at the beginning, I can't tell an animal what to do or what not to do. However, she kept doing that. And she kept doing that. And I said, why don't you stop for a minute and imagine, if you were this animal, why would you be doing these things? Why would you be sitting too close to the road if you are a cat in your front yard? Might you be wondering what's on the other side? You know, I can't tell a cat don't sit close to the road because there's cars, because a cat might be being a cat thinking, yeah, but there's a cat that lives across the street and I'm watching to see if he's out tonight or not. And so it's very important to remember, think from their perspectives and also their personality, because they have their individual personalities. And a story I want to share, some of you may have heard about this boy. He's a dog of my past. He's on my website on the cover, on the homepage. His name is Kasha. And he was a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and he came from a neighbor that was extremely abusive, and I can confidently say I legally liberated him by using telepathy, because I was about to, they lived in the house directly behind me when I lived in Westminster, I was already creatively thinking about how to pull the slats of the wood fence down in the middle of the night quietly enough to go in and save him. And yet I knew that might not be the right thing, because it was a neighbor. I was going to have to deal with them on a daily basis, even if I did get Kasha out of there and help him. So I pleaded with Kasha to show me a sign if I was supposed to help. And he, I don't know how, I never saw, but he got himself out of his backyard, came around the block, and was sitting on my front porch at 5:30 one morning after I had been on the deck at 11 o'clock at night sobbing, sending him telepathic messages, you have to show me a sign if I'm supposed to help. And he did. He made it happen. And when Kasha came to me, he couldn't wag his tail. There was no way he could wag his tail. There was no happiness in his body. However, he was feeling safe the minute he found me. I, of course, could not keep him because the neighbors would see. So I took him to a friend's mom who said she'd be happy to keep him temporarily because we were going to be moving to the mountains and he could come live with us in the mountains. She fell in love with him and said no problem. She also wouldn't let us have him back right away, which was fine because we got settled in the mountains. It was kind of a fun joke of how loved he was. He went from a lousy household to two households fighting over him, so to speak. So he couldn't wag his tail. And I desperately wanted to help him. So I'm using the word desperate because I know all of you on the phone have probably had a moment where you are desperate to try and help your animal out of a situation, help them feel better, help them out of pain. And we can get desperate. We do feel desperate. And I remember feeling desperate. How can I help him? He's been so abused. And I just would look at him and I'd say, Kasha, besides love, what do you need? I'll do anything for you. And he said that he wanted me to quit repeating his story because I was telling everybody, not in gory detail of what I saw of how the woman, it was a woman, would abuse him in the backyard. But, you know, if somebody went to meet him, he was very shy and he was very, he would pull away. And so I would say to them, you know, he was abused and I'm helping him learn to trust. And so I would announce his history, basically, is what I was doing. And he told me to knock it off, and he shouted it at me one day when I was in the middle of doing it, and I'll always remember it, and he taught me that, and he told me to teach all of you, quit living the animal's history, the animal's background, the animal's sad past. It doesn't help them at all. They're not living it. They're in the moment, and that one of the worst things we could do is stay stuck in their bad news, because when we stay stuck in it, we're in a place of pity, sorrow. We're imagining the worst. We're thinking about it. We're telling people about it. We're holding the energy. We're visualizing it by accident, so they have to see it over and over again. It's one of the worst things we can do. So when we are learning the animals that we love, and many of you have rescued animals, learn them in the moment. Learn their perspectives. Learn their personality. And what I had to learn about Kasha was, not only did he have that bad story, which I totally accepted what he taught me, and I stopped reliving it, and I would just say to people, he's not ready to say hi yet, and that's all I'd say. if someone was coming towards him. And then that would dissipate it. They would stop coming forward. They didn't say why. They just accepted it, and it gave him the space to feel safe, and eventually he could come forward and meet people that he chose. He also taught me, though, I was so caught up in his past and worrying about him and feeling desperate to help him be a happier boy, that he taught me he was a shy, gentle creature, even before the abuse. That's who he was born as. And so I was mistaking some of that as, well, he's timid or he's frightened, and which he was, some of that too. But I had to get past his past in order to learn who he was and his shyness and his gentle creature, then work on instilling confidence in him, love him for who he was, help him heal. And I used to make it a game to tell him happy tale. I'd say, let's see a happy tale. And I would imagine a happy tale wagging, and I would have him, I would notice other dogs, and I'd say, you see that happy tale? When you feel happiness, that's what a tail does. And I made it upbeat, and I made it a game. And slowly but surely, that tip of that tail would start to wag a little bit the first few months. Took a full year before that tail wagged back and forth and back and forth. And that, to me, was such a wonderful accomplishment. I remembered feeling desperate at the beginning, took a whole year, but who cares? And when he died suddenly of a heart attack, very unexpected, he was very similar to that other animal that I mentioned that had a healing. He lived with us for 5 years. He had a great life. He used to sit on the deck and say, I'm a mountain dog. And he used to look out, and he just loved his life. He loved how he had become a whole being. He was happy. He was joyful. He would greet people. He was shy still in his approach, and he was a very gentle boy, but he was no longer intimidated or overwhelmed or any of that. All of that was gone. And then he checked out one day, and I didn't do a surgical procedure afterwards to find out what happened. I just knew he was complete, and he had a wonderful journey, and I got to accept that. So remember to learn them. Learn them from their perspectives, their personality. Let go of the background or the history. Number two. More social time, please. And I'm going to use Molly. This is Alexa's dog. I know that Alexa has told her story, so I knew this was not confidential, and I didn't ask her ahead of time. I'm just being bold because it came to me this morning. She's a great example. Molly is a Border Collie, and I wrote down in my notes, the Border Collie that could, because I remember when I very first met Molly, Alexa rescued her. She had been abused. She was similar to Kasha's story. If you had met Molly, when I met Molly, you would have thought there's no way she could be the dog that she is today. Many people would have thought that. I'm sure Alexa would probably be nodding her head right now. And so what Alexa learned from Molly was the best thing she could do, one of the best things she could do was socialize her, because she had been abused. So sometimes we make a mistake of, if someone's been hurt or someone is scared of dogs or someone is scared of people, we protect them and we make sure we walk across the street and don't let them get near another dog, and we make sure that if we go someplace and there's people coming, oh, we better turn because there's people coming, and we are busy being caught up in their trauma, but we're keeping it going. So sometimes what we have to do is help them move out of their comfort zone safely, gently, mildly, in small doses. And so what Alexa started doing, I'm not remembering everything in detail, this was many years ago, but I know that she definitely started socializing Molly first and foremost with dogs at dog parks and with neighbors with their dogs. And slowly but surely, fortunately, because along with the dog comes humans, Molly was able to start liking the humans, because she'd learned that, oh, okay, well, I'm having really fun time with this dog. Oh, and who are you? Oh, you go with this dog? Well, you must not be so bad. And she slowly but surely would let humans reach out to her and pet her without barking and panicking and freaking out. And so social time is extremely important, especially if you have animals that have emotional issues. Don't baby them. Don't protect them so much that you don't help them grow. And if you don't have animals with emotional issues, then they just want more social time because they want to have more fun. So sometimes I find that people who have dogs, for example, with a backyard, they think, well, you know, I've got more than one dog. They're out there playing. But then they wonder, how come when I go to the vet, they're so aggressive with another dog as you know, they're in the parking lot? Well, when's the last time they met another dog? If they're in their yard with just their buddy and they don't socialize, they don't have social skills. They see another dog and they're not sure, are you a friend? Are you a threat? I don't know what you are, so I better get extreme just in case. So we really are doing them a disservice by not walking them. Horses, same thing. Sometimes people will tell me, well, my horse gets along with the horses on either side of it where it lives, but I don't let it out in the pasture very often because there's horses it doesn't get along with. Well, sometimes people don't get along, but that doesn't mean we don't go out and about. And, I mean, if it's not safe, if they're going to hurt each other, that's different. But often we can talk to the animal and ask them, hey, if you don't like that bossy mare over there, just ignore her. Go to the other end of the pasture. But as a caregiver, don't keep the horse confined and away from a bossy mare forevermore and have them not, perhaps not have the social time they need to overcome some of that. So we have busy lives. We often want to be home when we do get home. And sometimes we think, okay, we went for a quick walk, or, I love you very much, and going out in the yard and play, or, you know, it's not that the animals are unhappy when they're asking for more social time. A lot of times these are very loved animals, very happy animals. Perhaps they get walks every day, but they're asking for social time, and that is different. Take them to parks where you just sit and hang out and relax. Let them watch the world. Let them watch a dog playing frisbee down in the other end of the park. Let them see people jogging. Let them see a variety of things so they can be more whole in their understandings. Okay, number three, more mental stimulation. This overlaps a little bit with the social time. And so one of the messages I hear from the animals is they'll say to their human, remember, I'm looking at the same things all day long while you're out. So I believe many health issues are related to stagnant lifestyles with the animals. There's arthritis, there's lameness, there's obesity. I believe even perhaps dementia. I just had a person tell me the other day, somebody I met socially, and she asked what I did, and I told her, and she said, well, what do you think of this? She said, I pet sit for my neighbor's cat, and she walks her neighbor's, she asks me to walk her. She says she walks her cat every day. She's an indoor-only cat, but she walks her cat every day around the neighborhood a little bit on a harness, which the cat will do. She trained her. And the woman's reason is she doesn't want her cat to get Alzheimer's by being in the house all the time looking at the same things. And I thought, wow, that's pretty great that that woman gets that. Now, not all cats are going to do the harness thing. As a matter of fact, most do not. But that doesn't mean we can't offer them more mental stimulation. For indoor cats, for example, bird feeders outside, sometimes people think, well, that's torture. You know what? It gives them something to watch. It gives them something to do. They're not inside drooling and wishing they could eat every bird they see. They're actually intrigued, and they're watching them flap, and they get into hunting mode, and it helps them just feel. Beds by the windows are real important, and to change things around. So if they have a favorite bed by a certain window, move it to another window after a while so they suddenly have newness to try out. And treats, if you have the kind of household where you can do this, if you have multiple animals, this may not work, but sometimes just putting treats, hiding them in different places, and letting them look like they're feel like they're hunting during the day. They can go out and they can look around, they can follow their nose, they can do something a little differently. Of course, these are ideas for when you're not home. When you're home, you can play with them, etc. Horses, for example, that are in stalls or small runs, people forget that they need walks. You know, even if they say, well, it's an older horse and I don't ride much, or I'm busy training another horse so I'm not riding this one as much as I should, then walk them. Go play with them. Go talk to them. Go hang out with them. When you're grooming them, don't just groom them, but talk to them. Tell them stories. Tell them about your day. Tell them about your vacation, because you'll be imagining it, and you'll help with mental stimulation for them. They want to know about newness. They want to know about the world. One of my favorite things that when I was very first understanding animal communication was I was driving in a car, and you see this all the time, horses out in fields and a bird sitting on their butt. And one day when I was practicing animal communication more actively, I was driving by, and actually somebody else was driving, and I was sitting there as a passenger, and I'm looking out the window, and I thought, I've never wondered why the bird sits on the horse's butt. So I said, hey, what are you guys doing? I sent the message, and the horse said, oh, he's telling me about all the things he sees when he flies. And so the birds, I believe, are often coming and hanging out with the horses and giving them stories about, well, if you go down this way and you fly this way, there's a lake, and then there's this, and then there's that, and we see this, and we see that. And it helps them mind travel, so to speak. It helps them broaden their experiences and do more things, even if they're not literally leaving the pasture. So think about mental stimulation and what you could do. Dogs waiting inside all day, another example, you know, that dogs are very patient. People say, oh, you know, she's fine, she's content, and actually I'll ask the dog, how are you doing during the day? I'm fine, I'm comfortable, I look out the window a little bit, and then I go lay down, or I just rest and I wait until she comes home and we go for a walk every day, I'm happy. But year in and year out, that can be really hard. So what I encourage you to do is think about, what did you do during your day? What did you see? Who'd you talk to? And what things occurred? And then stop and think about, what did my animal do during the day? Did they stare at the same walls? Were they in a small space? Were they in a somewhat large space? Did they get to play with their doggy buddy? And just evaluate. Again, it's not about rights or wrongs. It's not about feeling guilty or bad. Don't go there. It's about evaluating, never thought about that. My kitty is very happy, very content inside, but you know what? I could change the furniture a little bit, and if I move the couch over here, she could be on the back of the couch, which she loves to do, and see out the window. Maybe I'll do that for her for a change. So just start thinking outside the box a little bit of what we could do for our animals that are very happy and very loved and very content, but can we do anything else to increase their mental stimulation? So dogs waiting inside all day, you might want to give them a Kong with treats. I don't know why, for myself, I had an epiphany realizing one day when I had a puppy added to the family and my two dogs were older and I was giving him a Kong because he had to have it so he didn't chew things. And so, of course, the two older ones had to have them. And I thought, why did I stop doing this for my two? Just because they got older and weren't chewing on things didn't mean I couldn't give them stuff when I was going out. And I felt bad. I was like, why? I never thought about that. So think about that. Think about giving them Kongs, giving them treats, perhaps playing sounds, perhaps having nature tape play for the first hour that you leave the house, or perhaps having music on, or perhaps having the television on. Also, a lot of times people say, well, you know, is there anything my dog needs? And the dog says, yeah, I need to get outside. I need to stretch my legs. I need to pee. Holding it for 8 hours is not a good thing, and it's not an easy thing. And please don't crate animals for all day long. It is a prison. It is not an okay thing. Crates were created for training purposes, not for cages. And so they do need to stretch. They do need to potty. They do need potty breaks. So maybe a dog walker. Or a lot of times I'll say to people, do you have a neighbor with a dog? And yeah, my neighbor works from home. Great. Can your dog go play over there a couple days a week? Their dog would probably be happy to have a playmate. Your dog would be happy. So a lot of times it's not even about budget. Sometimes there's a solution right around the corner if we just, again, think outside the box to offer them more stimulation. And as a reminder, I'm just going to remind you that these are requests that happy animals are asking for. So, again, I don't want you thinking, oh, my poor dog, I never thought of any of that. You just start thinking, oh, good, I got new ideas. Because they're going to feel you if you're feeling guilty or bad, and they're not going to like it. They're going to worry about you. Item number 4, more exercise, please. I'm sure this is not one that is surprising to you. So, again, you can think about your day. What have you done? What have they done? I know how often we come home tired from work. I know how hard exercise is for them. And I also know it's a commitment you made to love them in the best way you can by getting them. So if it is a doggie and they've been home all day, they absolutely need their walks. They need to stretch their legs. They need to sniff. They need to take in the world. So don't do just a jog, for example, where they don't get to be a dog. They don't get to stop and sniff. Don't get impatient if they're sniffing for 2 minutes. Let them sniff. They're dogs. It's stimulating for them. It helps them think. It helps them be a dog. So stroll a little bit more sometimes when you have animals that are doing things. Same things with horses. You know, if you're exercising them more, don't let it just be training for the for the horse show or trying to accomplish a new maneuver. Sometimes let it just be strolling up to the lake and sitting by the water and letting them listen to the birds and relax and drink some water and hang out. And remember that, you know, exercise is not just rigid getting out there and accomplishing something, but it's often being and just breathing deeply and having more joy and feeling good. And remember, if we have them in confined spaces, which with many types of animals we have to, whether it is, you know, a puppy that has to be confined because of danger around the house, or for myself, I have two rabbits. And, for example, with Josephine, my first rabbit, she was very content by herself, it seemed, and she has her own room now, but I do have an X-Pen, which is one of those collapsible gate things that are for dogs, typically, or puppies. And so she's got about two-thirds of the room, and I have the X-Pen across there, and she was very content, never really bothered it. You know, I would often bring her out in my other house. I would bring her out and say, it's time for you to come out and play. She would be grumpy. I don't know if I want to. And I'd say, you're coming out because I don't want you just sitting in here by yourself. Come on out. The dogs want to see you. The cats want to see you. And I would make her come out and about, which she always ended up being grateful for, but she was very dramatic every time I would go and get her. But I pushed her, and said, you're going to come out. This is important for you. You need the exercise. You need to run around. So now here at this house, I've gotten a second rabbit, Timothy, and I've learned something new, and that is that if I have not gotten them out, if I've worked later because I let them out every evening to run around the house, if I've worked a little long or and my office is right next door to their room, he'll start rattling the X-Pen. He'll shake it and rattle it, and he'll move it, he'll nudge it. He was able to open it, and so I've put some bricks to hold it in place. But I asked him one day, I said, what are you doing? He said, it's my playtime. Let me out. So I hadn't really thought yet about his playtime. I mean, I was letting them out because it's the right thing to do, but since Josephine never cared, never really wanted to go out, this is an example of how you can have a couple animals with very different personalities. So don't get too caught up in what one might like and not honor what the other one might need. So I open it up every night. Josephine sometimes never comes out. Sometimes she comes out and plays. Sometimes she comes out for a while, but Timothy comes out every time, hangs out in the living room, plays with the cats. He's much more social. So also remember when we're offering exercise or movement or options out of confined places that each animal is different. And that goes into the next one, which is number 5, and that is more space to exist if possible. Just yesterday I did a consultation with a long-term client. He has 4 chihuahuas. 2 are elders and 2 are young. And he has always, forever, the elders, closed them into the laundry room because that's what they like. They like, he's got beds all set up and, you know, everything's all cozy. And if they have to potty, he doesn't care. They can potty and it's, you know, linoleum floor, blah, blah, blah. So he's got the puppies in there, too, because that's just what he always did. Well, the puppies are no longer puppies, actually. They're now a couple years old. So during this consult, one of them said, is there a reason I can't be in more of the house during the day? I get bored. And so I asked him, why do you have the puppies in there? Or do they cause damage in your house? And he said, well, no, not really. And he said, that's just what I've always done. And he hadn't even really thought about it. It was habit. It's what he always did. Tucked the dogs in. You're all safe. Love you guys. They're small, so a laundry room feels big to them. But he said, wow, I could open up the whole kitchen to the puppies. And I said, I think it'd be nice for the elders to take a break from the puppies. And it would give the puppies space to run around and play with each other and not bug the elders. And that was like this huge, oh my gosh, why hadn't I done this sooner? I didn't even think about it. I can offer them the whole kitchen. He said, I won't give them the rest of the house because one of them does still pee and poop in the house a little bit. But that was perfect, you know, and going from the laundry room to the whole kitchen was triple the size, and now they're going to have puppy playground. And he doesn't care if they pee or poop in there. He can clean it up easily. So sometimes if we just look at the space that we're offering to our loved ones, how can we perhaps offer different space for change, or how can we expand it, or is it working for them? Horses often tell me when they're in a run or in a small area, even if it's not real tiny and confined, that it's often dirt, and they say, we need to run around on softer soil. We need to run around in the grass. Of course, we love to eat the grass. We need to feel more free and more playful. We're getting too stiff. We're getting too arthritic. We're standing around too much, and so they often ask for more space, understandably so. And then another example of just thinking about, well, what would space do for an animal is a veterinarian that I worked with who has a horse, and she purchased this horse from Ireland, had the horse brought all the way over from Ireland, is very dedicated to this horse, has very high expectations of this horse. He's a beautiful horse. He's a performing horse. She does shows with him. Well, she was getting more and more frustrated because she said, Terry, I'm with him every day. I work with him every day. He's acting out. She was getting grumpy, so she was acting out. She said, you know, I'm using the whip on him, and I shouldn't, and I'm finding myself behaving in a way I don't like, but he's so obstinate. And so I asked him, what's going on? And he said, could I just have a little more space to stretch my legs when we're not working? Because she was thinking the space was, well, I get on him, and I exercise him. But it was always controlled, and it always had expectations. And he just wanted to be a horse and stretch his legs. Literally, he wanted to stretch. He wanted to move his body and stretch in different positions. And so she hadn't even thought about that. She's like, wow, you know, I figured I was getting him. I spend several hours a day with him. I was grooming him. She's an excellent, you know, human for this horse, but she also had very high expectations, and she was often quite serious when they would get together because, oh, there's a show coming up in 2 weeks, and I want to make sure you can do this jump and blah, blah, blah. So he was just saying, could we just hang? Could I just loosen, you know, up in a space and just hang. So then she learned, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can put him over here where he can stretch his legs before I saddle him up and afterwards. And she found a way to do that. And she called me and said, I can't believe he's like a different horse. When I get on him now, he just does what I'm asking of him. And I said, see, he just needed a little more space, needed to stretch his legs, needed to have a little more joy. Also needed her to lighten up because she was getting more and more intense and more frustrated about the show coming up, which to him, he's in the moment. Remember, they're in the moment. He's not thinking about his performance in 3 weeks. He could give a flip. He's in the moment. And he's been standing around all day. He's finally out. He'd like to stretch his legs and nibble on a little grass. Is that too much for a horse to ask? That was his approach. So when we think about the space we're offering them, and we're thinking about reevaluating what we currently do for them and how we can make it better, all she needed to do was give him some stretch time outside of his stall before she saddled him up and after she took the saddle off, and it calmed him down, gave him some breathing room, and enhanced their relationship, and he's doing great in the shows. All right, item number 6. Better food, please. And I'm not going to spend time on this one because the next two talks coming up are on nutrition. In August, it's going to be on dog nutrition. In September, it's going to be on cat nutrition. But I would have to say this is the number one request from animals. They know their bodies need better nutrition. They can tell when they don't feel vibrant. They realize their poor diets are leading to illnesses and a shorter life with you. I have many, many, many stories that I could share about what I learn from the animals when they say, I could use some meat. I could use some nutrients. Just yesterday, I did a consultation in a person's home, 8-year-old Burmese Mountain Dog, and the first thing he said was, I don't feel good. I need nutrients. And so I checked in with him energetically, and I could tell he was on not such good food. Well, he was on a prescription food, dry food only, that the vet gave them because he has bad teeth. Now, that is not the perfect solution for bad teeth, but pet food companies have gotten very creative and very clever with their marketing. So here's a food for teeth, here's a food for kidneys, here's a food for hairballs. They have all these prescription foods, which is, if you talk to a holistic vet, a bunch of baloney for many of them. There's many other ways to address bad teeth besides giving them a poor quality nutritional dry food only diet. So I talked to them a little bit about, are you open to giving him meat? Because they said he also lost a lot of weight. And he said he was just pooping it all out because there weren't very many nutrients. It's full of fillers. And these prescription foods, by the way, if you don't already know, are extremely expensive too. So it's not only a gimmick, but it's a very big money-making gimmick. And unfortunately, the vets, often traditional vets, they're not trained in nutrition. I was shocked to learn from a veterinary friend of mine, they do not get trained in nutrition in veterinary school. They don't. They simply don't. I recently went to a vet school, grand opening of a new building here in Corvallis, and they did a tour, and I asked them, it was a student who did the tour, and I asked them, I figured I knew the answer, but I had to ask because she talked about roundtable luncheons and how different companies would come in and they would treat them to lunches. Well, I used to work in the medical field, and, you know, the drug reps love to come in and bring, you know, a box of chocolates to the staff and say, remember, tell Dr. So-and-so to prescribe this medicine. And so they do the same thing to the veterinary students. They come in, and Purina buys them all lunch. Well, they're starving students. They love that they're being bought a lunch. And she said, and they tell us what foods to feed. So they go in, and they say, feed this one, and this one, and this is why, and enjoy your lunch. And then they go off, and they become veterinarians, and that's what they tell people to feed their animals because they don't know any better. But they're not taught nutrition. So you will have the luxury of learning more about cat nutrition and dog nutrition in particular in the next couple of talks. And with that, I just want to say that this doggy from yesterday, they were very happy to hear that they didn't know any better. I could tell by the smell of his skin, the dullness of his coat. He's lost 15 pounds since they've put him on the food, which he needed to lose about 8 pounds, but not that much. And he says he's just deteriorating because this food is nothingness. He's just debilitated. And so they were thrilled to learn that. And absolutely, they're going to cook him meat and add it to the food, et cetera. And just one other example on that topic is I did a talk with a client the other day, and I'm shocked when people say this because these are loving people who love their animals. She said, well, he just doesn't eat for a few days at a time. I figure he'll eat when he's hungry. I'm shocked when I hear that, and I can't tell you how often I've heard that. Animals eat because they're hungry. Animals are hungry daily. If an animal is not eating his food or her food, the animal does not like his or her food. Or the animal could be sick or have a belly problem. But if this is a repeat thing and it comes and goes, he doesn't like his food. He flat out doesn't like his food, so he's like, eh, I'll wait until I'm desperate. So if your animals stop eating, first of all, you check to see if there's health issues. But if you call them a picky eater, they probably aren't a picky eater. They find their food a little pathetic, or they're bored, or it's bad quality. So a lot to be learned, and I hope you attend the talks for that, those. Or if not, read books, research on the Internet. Number 7 is teach me more. I need to learn and build my confidence. I can't emphasize enough that if we are too nice to our animals, if we're always saying, come here, Fluffy, I love you very much, and then we want to know why they bark so much or why they do this or why they do that, because you're not giving them rules and boundaries and setting expectations. It's essential if you have a dog to work with a trainer and train that dog to be a good dog and have high expectations and be their boss. Dogs need a boss. It's essential with cats that you let them know the rules. No, you're not allowed to scratch that furniture. Get away from my couch, and say it like you mean it. Don't say, no, 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 or just get the squirt bottle. Teach them what you need. Teach them more. Again, that's a training talk. I don't have one of those planned because I am not a trainer, though many of my issues do overlap with training. But it's very important to know to teach them to build their confidence, and they will be a more whole being if you teach them. They also, and this overlaps, number 8 is explain what you need from me. I can't understand your perspective easily, is what the animals say to the humans. So talk to me. Tell me what's important to you. I want to please you. And an example I have of that is my dog Shiloh, who has since passed, but when I first adopted her from the Aussie rescue, she was 2. The previous person, and full of love, very bubbly, bouncy, jumped, big Aussie, 70-pound Aussie, big bone girl, wasn't fat, but she was just real big, the bigger ones. And the previous owner, I did not know, taught her to jump up in the air, run towards somebody, sorry, let's not forget this, 70 pounds of dog running at a complete stranger, leaping in the air, kissing their cheek, and landing without touching them. Well, she thought she was doing that to please because it pleased him. I didn't know the trick, and when I started taking her to open space and she was running up to complete strangers and doing that, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, because it was scary. It was scary, and then they'd laugh because it didn't hurt them if they were dog-loving people, which most of them are out in dog-free areas, but I had to teach her and talk to her about that doesn't work for me because I'm going to take you places where strangers aren't going to like that. And I had to tell her how cute it was and how sweet it was, but maybe she could wait until she meets the person, and if the person, you know, squats down and they're putting them and they're all giggly, then she can kiss them because that kind of person's going to want kisses. But I had to really explain from my perspective why that didn't work and what I needed instead. I needed her to run up to people and wiggle her cute Aussie butt, but not jump on them. And definitely not leap in the air and kiss their cheek. And so as soon as I explained that to her, she got it and realized she could still please me by not doing that, but doing it other ways. So they're asking us, the animals are asking you, to explain to them what you need. And again, this goes back to that caregiver balance. If you don't explain to them what you need, they will never know how to be a better animal with you. And it causes them fretting and stress to wonder what they're supposed to do next if you're not telling them. So express your needs. Tell them your perspective. Help them learn. Number 9 is receive, receive, receive. Please let me help you back. Animals tell me that, and I can't tell you how often I hear this, that they want to help you too. They bring you joy when you are down. They entertain you when you need a lift. They cooperate with you when you need to feel loved. But you often are not letting in the help. And so it's very important for you to receive from the animals. If you're having a bad day, sit on the floor and tell them, I've had a bad day. I could use some love. It's not about getting home and thinking, I know I need to walk you, and then I need to feed you, and then I need to do this, and then I need to do that, because I'm the caregiver. Because caregivers need to receive, too. The animals want to help us heal. They want to help us feel better. They want to love us. So sometimes it's really great to just say, I need to receive right now. And it makes them so joyful to be able to help you. And the final one is number 10, love yourself as much as you love me. And I'm going to repeat that one. The animals in your life want you to love yourself as much as you love them. If there's anything you could start doing beginning today, this would be the one that I would suggest to you. When you're not taking care of yourself, it hurts your animals. When you are self-degrading, or you make fun of yourself, or you beat yourself up verbally, or you don't like yourself, it's painful for your animals. When you are self-abusing with any substances such as food, cigarettes, alcohol, drugs, it worries them constantly. They wonder why you're hurting yourself and what can they do to help. And so you want to ask yourself, what are you doing to take care of you? And then tell your animals. I mean, if you've had something bad happen, if you've had a death in the family and you're down and out and you're not eating as well as you should and you're not exercising, I'm not saying get your butt in gear and be normal, but tell them, I'm having a hard time. I'm feeling sad. I'm going to take a bubble bath instead of exercising today. But tell them what you're doing for yourself to take care of yourself, because the animals need this. And they really want to remind you to remember balance. So that is the most important thing. And I'm going to kick us on to conversation mode just a moment. Okay, if you want to unmute, and if there's a comment or a brief question, we have about 5 minutes here to talk about anything that may tie in with the top 10 requests, or perhaps even a comment of what it stimulated in you, because this is a lot of content that may not have stimulated questions, but anything you may want to share. Just unmute yourself, say your name.
Terry, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. When you talk about the background and the history and things like that, and I've heard you say this multiple times, and I I'm wondering, you know, I often share my cat's background because I'm so proud of how far they've come, and I say how different they are and how wonderful they are now.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that that's okay? Because I don't feel like I'm stuck with where they were. I'm just
that's
so darn proud
question.
Of who they are now.
Great question. And no, that is absolutely fine, as long as you're not reliving the details of the background. You don't have to say, well, when I got him, he was really skinny, and he used to run and hide all the time and all of that. You can just say, you know what? This cat has come so far. He was so different when I first got him, and I'm so proud because he's gained weight. Say the things you're glad about. Say the things that are going well. You just don't have to relive where he came from. He said, yeah.
Yeah, that's our sponsor.
Okay, anybody else?
You know, this is Melinda. I just had one, when you were talking about Kasha learning to wag his tail.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in Brooklyn, we had a cat show up in the middle of a blizzard. And he never purred. And in the middle of the summer the next year, he was sitting on the bed and wheezing and making these horrible noises. And I thought, oh my God, the cat is going to die. No, he was learning to purr.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
He was turning on his purr box.
He was. It didn't work. It was kind of rusty at the start.
It's never too late.
Right.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that, Melinda. Anybody else?
Terry, this is Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, I'm just curious. I have a wonderful dog, two wonderful dogs, but one, she used to be extremely aggressive, and then I took her to the dog park, and she's just been wonderful with all the dogs. But the minute I take her out on a walk on a leash, and a dog comes by, and I'm not sure if it's because of the dog, but then she gets aggressive again.
Mm-hmm. Often leashes, if you could imagine somebody controlling you by your throat.
No, I don't do that. It's a harness on their
harness.
Back.
Okay, good. Even a harness. Is somebody controlling you by your whole body then? And yes,
yes.
That's much better than the throat. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I can't imagine the other.
But to be held back, to feel like just in case this dog were not to be my friend,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'd do because I feel vulnerable because I'm being controlled and held back. So some dogs have the personality that they will be tough guy first
mm-hmm.
and friend second. And you can teach them how to read a dog first and decide if they want to be a friend second. And one of the ways you can do that is perhaps to pause, like back farther on the sidewalk, and just stop for a moment and say, oh, here comes a doggy. What do you think? Does it feel friendly? Give them a moment to assess the dog, because often we walk upon a dog, and then they're right face-to-face, and they want to assess him, they want to sniff, they want to see, and I'll often say, oh, look, he's got a happy tail, and I'll just keep my tone upbeat, because they need that moment of assessment to decide if they're safe or not.
No, that is true, because if I know the dog, or if I look at something about the dog, I'll say, Layla, that's a nice dog, sweetie. We're
right.
going to be fine with this one. And she doesn't get aggressive.
Right.
If I don't know the dog,
yes.
then she's a great, and usually the dog attacks at her too. So I'm
Elena,
you were right.
It's a miscommunication. Yeah, when they attack at each other, it's just a miscommunication most of the time. I mean, it could
be a dog,
but it's usually a miscommunication. So that's perfect what you're doing. And then with that said, for everybody that's listening, make sure you don't get into the habit of just saying, "Oh, honey, it's just a dog. It's just a little dog. He's very friendly," when you don't know them, because that's not fair. You're not reading the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect that you're doing that, Pam. When you do know the animal, you're informing your dog of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here comes Molly. I know Molly. She's a sweet girl. Oh, yeah, she kind of jumps once in a while. Remember, she jumps. Or just tell them about her.
Right.
Or pause. And then with that said, some dogs just don't like meeting other dogs when they're on a leash. So sometimes that happens, and so we avoid it, and we have them meet dogs at dog parks. But I believe most of the time that can be overcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One last final question. Or comment.
Harriet, Susan, I don't have a question.
Uh-huh.
Well, I have about 6 million always, but I just want to thank you so much for all this information and education and being able to bring me and anyone listening to a whole other level of relationship to our dogs for their sake. I mean,
it
benefits me tremendously, and but for their sakes, they get to be freed up, like you said, to be dogs.
Yes.
And to be what they came to be, rather than feeling so burdened with having to take care of our needs and our fears and all of that.
That's right.
That, you know, all the things you mentioned about how we lay our fears on them and all of that, you know, if I could just remember that and say, they don't think like me.
Correct.
And they want to free me up to be completely different in my life. So I need to listen to them more and remember that they do think very differently. Thank goodness. So thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for saying that. That's a perfect grand finale for all of us. Thank you all very much for coming. And again, I want to emphasize the next talk, August 9th, is Enhancing Your Dog's Nutrition for Better Health. And my guest speaker is Dr. Holly Foster, a holistic veterinarian. She's also a student and has been to many mentoring circles, so some of you have met her. And on September 13th, we're doing Enhancing Your Cat's Nutrition for Better Health, and the guest speaker is Dr. Laura Deloach, who is another holistic veterinarian in Colorado. These are wonderful women with lots of knowledge. It'll be hard to do the short overview in the short period of time of a teletalk, because these obviously could each be all-day conferences. But I do hope that you can make those, and thank you all so very much for coming, and have a wonderful day. Enjoy the coolness out in Colorado. Have a great day.
Thanks, Terry.
Terry.
Thanks, Terry.